informative, and engaging. Rick Munn. Rick Munn on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Yes, indeed. Monday, the 19th of September, 2022. And props must be given to Patrick Henningsen. Patrick just did that little ad thing, little summary on cryptocurrency before my show started. And to be honest, I could listen to Patrick Henningsen all day. He could be talking about, a cup of coffee, and he can make it sound interesting. He'll sell it to you. He'll make you want to go out and buy it. He's quite a guy. He's a really nice guy. And if you're listening, Henningsen, get your ass back over here to Ireland ASAP. You owe me some food. Yes, you do. But anyway, that is by the by. Here we are. Another week. Another week begins. Another chance to shine, as my old area manager, cheesy management speak area manager for a large bank, used to say. And I absolutely detested that man with every fiber of my being. He used to come out with things like dare to soar like an eagle. Team together, everyone achieves more. Yes, it's your chance to shine. Cheesy management speak. Some people have made a lot of money off the back of it, and I know all the cheesy management things. I should actually set up as a management consultant. I think I would do very well at it, going around hapless multinational corporations, talking to their staff and brainwashing them. Because yes, that's what I'm good at. I'm good at brainwashing people, especially into thinking my way. That's why you're all listening right now, all two of you. Yes, because you want to be brainwashed by Rick Munn. Anyway, I'm joking. What a show we have lined up today. What a day it's going to be. The biggest, how would I say it, ritual on the planet possibly ever, which is the death and departing of the Queen Elizabeth II, or Elizabeth the Great, as she's now being referenced. My, what a circus London has turned out to be. And people are coming from all over the world to, quote, pay their respects, unquote. Translated means to further their own agendas. Most of them have never met the Queen, know nothing about the Queen. But hey, it's a chance to bask in the limelight and get the message out there of their globalist agendas. And boy, are they going to milk it for all it's worth. Today, later on in the show, I'm going to be joined by Prof. Ted Steele. He was actually the second guest I ever had on TNT Radio way back in the mists of time in January the 17th, to be precise, 2022. And Ted is joining me again for an update on life in Oz. And of course, Jesse Surowell will be joining me to round off the show from New Jersey. We have a lot to talk about. Karen Hunt is waiting in the wings just before she hops on a blitzkrieg. And I mean a blitzkrieg of what's going on at the minute. In the UK, of course, headlines are dominated by, the Queen's funeral. Other news, is there any other news? No, not really. If it's not the Queen's funeral, it's rioting in Leicester. There are mobs, Muslim mobs and Hindu mobs going at it like crazy in Leicester at the moment. Don't ask me why. Do we really need an excuse for public disorder these days? Suffice to say, it's getting a little bit hairy over there, and I've watched some of the footage, and the police are completely hapless. They have, you know, they've got literally young girls with, you know, German Shepherd dogs walking around trying to police thousands of baying, masked up, machete wielding men going, could you all step back, please? Step back, please. It's not going to work. And, you know, I've seen some other footage this weekend, and I'm not knocking the cops, by the way. I'm just saying what I see. There was a guy with a knife. They tasered him. He jumped up, pulled the taser out, stabbed two of them, and it took six cops to take this guy down and another three squad cars arriving. If that's the story, if that's what it takes to subdue one man with a knife, there just aren't enough police in the streets, I'm sorry to say. And I shudder to think what will happen if things kick off properly. So yeah, let's see what happens there as things develop. And we hope and I want to believe that our cops will be safe, but it's not looking particularly good. So Queen is being buried, a large-scale disorder breaking out in Leicester. The circus continues. The queue to visit Her Majesty lying in state has now abated. It was 22 hours at one stage. There are people queuing out overnight. A million people have filed past that coffin or draped in a flag. She was not visible, but they went and they paid the respects. Yeah, so that's all coming to an end. Whew. So anyway, we're going to take a deep breath. I'm going to take a deep breath. You can breathe however the heck you like. Who am I to tell you how to breathe? I'm going to take a deep breath. And I'm going to inform you that we have a website, tntradio.live, and also, an app on the Google Play Store and the App Store. Download it. You can connect with us at all times and check out what's on, find out who's on the shows, etc., etc. Make sure you connect with us at TNT Radio.
Stream us wherever you are.
I listen on Alexa.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Karen Hunt, welcome back to Locked and Loaded TNT Radio. Oh, what a day you have, or early morning you have picked to link with us once more. Welcome, and how are you doing?
Thank you. Excuse me, I have to start talking now. It's all, you know, it's like, what time is it? 2 o'clock in the morning. Oh. So my voice is never used to talking at this time of, so I have to get my voice going here. But I'm great. Thank you so much. Another exciting day. You never know what's going to happen in this world from day to day. It seems to get more crazier and crazier every time we talk, right?
Well, it does. And I mean, like, it doesn't normally, you know, sometimes there can be a little drought in events, you know, a little quiet period, not a lot's going on. But, you know, literally from not even week to week, from day to day now, things are just racking up a gear on the world stage. You know, there's a lot for us to talk about today. You've been writing furiously, I might add. So yeah, I want to make sure I touch on some of the stuff that you've been writing on, but also some, I want to focus in on America at the moment. By the way, Karen is a regular here on the show. You can catch up with her specifically, actually, on khmezek.substack.com. That's where you'll find all her written output, some video clips in there as well. She's a prolific writer, observer, social commentator. She's getting published all over the place on truthtalk.uk, Off Guardian are picking up your stuff as well. So you're super prolific, which is good. And you're writing about stuff that's important at this point in time. So just for any listeners out there who are wondering who you are, I hopefully have shined a little bit of light in that. Karen lives in LA, but she's traveled all over the world, spends a little bit of time in Arizona from time to time. And yeah, have I missed anything? Or you're an author? In fact, I could spend probably the next 48 minutes talking about what you've done, and then we wouldn't have any time to talk about anything else. So can I stop here?
Yeah, you can stop. Yeah, that's quite sufficient. Oh, you know, I should say sometimes too that I write, you know, I write, but I also read my essays. So if you don't like to actually read them yourself, you can listen to me tell my essays as well. You can do that. Yeah.
So yeah, check out her Substack and support her as well. There, by the way, like I said, she's a very prolific writer, and her material is being distributed far and wide. Before we get on to some of the things you've been writing about, just some little quick snippets of news that made me smile a little bit. Ron DeSantis and Gavin Newsom seem to be getting into little spats over the internet. Newsom was gurning about DeSantis and wanted a debate with him, and DeSantis quipped back that he thinks Newsom's hair gel is starting to interfere with his brain function. It's getting a little bit personal, isn't it? Hey, Ron's taking his gloves off.
Yeah, we have to put them in the ring. I don't know. That might be the only solution. No, this has been going on between them. And, you know, you wonder how much of this is just, you know, for show, or I don't even know anymore what it all means. But this whole thing with the sending the migrants off to Martha's Vineyard and these other places, dumping them in front of Kamala Harris's home. I mean, this is so funny. And the response, I mean, the response of the residents of Martha's Vineyard was just hilarious. The virtue signaling, oh, we welcome them. And then within 48 hours, they shipped them all off. We can't possibly deal. We have a housing crisis on the island, you know. And I actually have been to that island like three, it's a beautiful place. I've been there, like, I think three times for writer's residencies. I've been to Ireland. Do you know the Tyrone Guthrie Center in Ireland? Anyway, I've been there in the middle of Ireland somewhere, Tyrone Guthrie Center. It's a beautiful, it's in the middle of Ireland by a lake. And I've been there writing. So, you know, I used to go to these writer's residencies. You know, you get to go and you get to write and you can feel really important as a writer. Mm-hmm. But I went to Martha's Vineyard a few times and stayed in this beautiful old inn in Egerton. And it's like, it's almost like, I always felt like it was like an Agatha Christie novel or something, mm-hmm. because you're there with eight other writers and you're stuck in this inn and you don't know any of these people. And it's an absolutely exclusive, beautiful, beautiful place. So having been there and seen what it's like, and by the way, they have, you know, everyone that serves you there, like in the restaurants and stuff, they're all from Russia, or, you know, there are all these like young people that have come over. So those kind of migrants are okay. But, you know, bringing the migrants from Venezuela and dumping them on their doorstep, that was just too much for them to handle.
Yeah. And here's the thing, you know, Martha's Vineyard is where Obama has his waterfront property. And, you know, it's also been said that, you know, if he was so concerned about climate change and about water levels rising, why would he buy a humongous villa right on the edge of the water? So what happened, for the benefit of people who maybe aren't following this story outside of the US, there's a border crisis in America. People are piling over the border from Mexico and they've got to go somewhere. So there are sanctuary places that they can be sent to. So DeSantis packed them up in either a bus or a private jet and flew them up to Martha's Vineyard, which is a very affluent area, you know, where multimillionaires dwell and go to retire. Obama has a place there. Kamala Harris has a place there. Dumped them off the bus and said, okay, you deal with them. And the meltdown from the residents. We can't put them. And there was only 50 of them, right? There was only 50 of them. 50, 50, not 5 million or 5,000, 50, five, and they couldn't cope with 50. And there's so many, someone did an analysis of the housing market or the housing market makeup in Martha's Vineyard, and most of the properties there are empty year round because mm-hmm. they're holiday homes or places that the rich go for a little vacation for a few weeks here and there. There's no shortage of space in Martha's Vineyard, but as quick like, Karen, they were packed up and sent away somewhere else by the National Guard, I think it was. Yeah, where did they get sent to, by the way? Where did they send them to?
They sent them to actually another island, Cape Cod, but that happens to have a military base or something. So they shipped them off to the military. Now they're stuck inside, you know, pretty much like a prison or whatever. Uh-huh. But that island, Martha's Vineyard, is so wealthy, so mm-hmm. I mean, beyond what you could ever imagine and believe. And it's also funny because, you know, I think that's where Obama had his birthday party. So he did have tents set up for mm-hmm. you know, I don't know how many, at least 100 people on his huge property. I mean, he could have put up
thousands.
Some tents,
thousands.
Thousands. Okay, so.
That happened at lockdown. That happened while everyone was
during the
mask and social distance. Mm-hmm. He put up this marquee that literally was like a circus big top. There was thousands of people in there and they were all dancing and boogieing and getting on.
Maskless.
Let me tell you.
And all the help were wearing their masks. And, you know, it was so telling. And people, it's amazing to me that people don't, like, that they don't get it. I mean, it really amazes me that people still, like my liberal friends or whatever, they just don't get it. It amazes me. Mm-hmm. And apparently Biden's has gone up again in the apparently in the polls, you know, up to like 48% I don't know, which I don't get. But, you know, he won the election last time, however he did it. So who's to say it couldn't happen again? I'm not, anything can happen in this country at this point. I don't even know.
You would like to think that they've put the decimal point in the wrong place. It's not 48%. Yes. It's actually 4.8% or not 0.48%. You would like to think that. You would like to believe that based on the state that America's in at the minute. But like you said, and I'm sorry to have to agree with you on this one, I would not be at all surprised if those figures were actually accurate, because you can look around and go, no one's that stupid. No, people must be able to see this. Listen, from what we have seen in the UK over the last 7 days, you can't talk about anything. Enforced mourning. Everywhere's closed today. You can't go out and do anything. There's this shutdown with black screens everywhere and ER and the Queen's date of birth and death and everything on it. I don't put anything past anybody right now, and I don't underestimate the population on the whole to be absolutely buck stupid or crazy, to be quite honest with you. So you see that 48%? Highly questionable. But then again, there's part of me thinking, maybe it's actually real, because the people of this world right now, Karen, I don't put anything past them when it comes to stupidity.
Well, I think they've been, people have had such a psychological number played upon them. And I think that the majority of people just are at the point where they just cannot handle any more. In fact, they can't handle any more information because there's been so much thrown at them for so long. So they just really want to just accept. And everybody just wants to believe that everything's okay. Everything's going to be okay. You know, it's really not, because if people really did look at the reality, it would just, you know, I think they would just freak out too much. So I just think that's what people want to do. And I can't really blame people for that, you know, because it's really on the leaders to set the example, and our leaders are surely doing the worst job in history, I would say.
They are. All of them. Without any exception, they're all horrendous, and they're all difficult to watch and listen to. They're just not very likable people, period. I think that's part of the whole psychology of this, but we can get into that maybe in a little bit more detail, the psychology of what's going on after we take these short ads here. We'll be back in 2 minutes on TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's Mike Ryan.
The top official at the US Justice Department was a law partner with Hunter Biden's attorney Chris Clark, raising serious concerns about potential conflicts of interest as the years-long federal probe in the president's son has reportedly reached a critical stage. Clark, a partner at New York-based firm Latham & Watkins, worked with Nicholas McQuaid on at least 4 different cases, which he was also a partner at the practice, according to court records. The cases were high-stakes commercial litigation where the pair regularly defended clients facing multi-million dollar lawsuits. McQuaid was named acting head of the Justice Department's criminal division on January 20, 2021, that's the day President Biden was inaugurated. Clark started representing Hunter Biden a month before. Hunter Biden has been under investigation by the Department of Justice since 2018, and a probe initially centered around taxes that's reportedly expanded into potential money laundering and violations of foreign lobbying laws. McQuaid's involvement brings up questions about the ethics of the Hunter Biden probe.
Mike Ryan on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Let's take advantage of the freedoms that we have while we have them to advance the kingdom's objective, to be salt and light.
Freedom is hard. Election security involves you, involves the voters.
This election for people of faith is vital that we see a change, because the war against Christians is at an all-time high.
Transparency is the key not only to having honest elections, but to maintaining public trust in those elections.
our ability to vote is not being withheld from us. No one's trying to stop you from voting.
The one place the American people can have a say is at the ballot box. That's why the Democrats and the far left are working so hard to get rid of all election integrity.
We cannot let our elections be anything but transparent. It is at the very heart of freedom in a free society.
And if we lose America, I mean, it's all over, because the world has looked to America for hope.
Free and fair at salemnow.com.
When you need to know what's going on around the world and at home, keep it on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Okay, I've been very kindly joined at 2 a.m. California time by Karen Hunt, a.k.a. khmezek.substack.com. She's got more than one name. And, you know, I was always taught if someone has aliases, you got to keep an eye on them. But she's legit. I would vouch for Karen, and yeah, I would say she's all right. But then again, what do I know? I'm just a crazy
Irishman.
You
never know.
You never know. So yeah, buyer beware. That's all I'm saying with Karen Hunt. But she's good for me. We get her on the show. We'll have a chat. One look at some of the things you've been writing about, and we've got like 6 minutes until the news. I want to touch on crypto. You did a piece on the 15th of September, titled Ethereum and the Merge. Mr. Henningsen was touching on this business of crypto just before the show started. People out there, some people think it's the way forward. Other people think it's the greatest Ponzi scheme in history. Where are you standing on it? And where do you see this going, in that the government's starting to get a little bit hands-on with crypto now, talking about how, you know, it needs to be regulated. We need to make sure you're safe and your money's safe, and we need to sort of step in and regulate this. What's your take on all of this?
Excuse me. Well, I think it's, well, first of all, I found this to be a fascinating subject. And way back a month ago, I wrote a thing about Bitcoin. And then I wrote this, I wrote a piece not that long ago called Soulbound, which was about Ethereum. And, mm-hmm. and then of course, the merge happened, where they shifted it. And so I, you know, I had to write, I wrote a little thing about that, but, I think that it's all part of the same thing. It's sort of like, I describe it like, you know, when you go to the market and you see five different kinds of cereal, you know, there's like the expensive cereal and the cheaper cereal, and they already know who's going to buy which type of cereal, mm-hmm. because they've done all this research on people, psychological research. And so a certain type of person will buy this and somebody else will buy that, but it's all made by the same company. So yeah. That's sort of how I feel about this. You've got all these people think that they are having a choice. They think that, and it's a very cultish as well. You know, if you look at mm-hmm. Bitcoin and Satoshi Nakamoto, you know, that was this mysterious figure that created. And then when you look at Ethereum, Vitalik Buterin, I did a whole research into him and how, and even, you know, his soul-bound tokens. I mean, if you just mm-hmm. look at the names of these things, mm-hmm. where you're supposed to, you know, buy and sell with these soulbound tokens. And what happens within these communities, like within a community, you are actually validated by the other people in your community. And if you really look at what it really is, it's quite frightening, because it's not based on anything except an illusion. And so within that illusion, whoever is in charge of that illusion can determine again who is legit and who isn't. So that's basically the way that I look at it. And I mean, for people, there are people who, I'm sure, if you can get something out of it and you can, you know, make some money or whatever, mm-hmm. good for you. I'm not saying, you know, this is all, it's mm-hmm. not in and of itself something evil, but it is definitely being used by the one world government or the world order to make this gigantic shift, because the whole system that we have has completely failed, and they have to make this shift. They don't have any other choice but to make this shift.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's one of those things you need to really proceed with caution. From my experience, and I mean, I worked in financial services for 10 years. I was an independent advisor dealing with offshore investments, tax planning, tax mitigation, unit trusts, investment trusts, OICs, you name it, I was dealing with it. One thing I found was that people tended to take advice more so from their friends than actually qualified advisors. So I could go in and give you a portfolio suggestion and you could be talking to your best friend at the gym and she's like, no, that's no good because I think you should do this. And usually the average punter will actually take the advice of their friends and family over an actual qualified advisor. So I think there's a lot of hype around crypto, and like yourself, undoubtedly, if you went into it years ago, you've made a killing on it now if you've liquidated your position. If you're piling into it now on the basis of what people have done in the past, then it's highly possible that you could get your fingers severely burnt, or it could be the greatest move you've ever made. Time will tell, but whatever you do, listeners, please make sure you do your own research before you go into this and don't invest more than you can afford to lose. So if you want to put 10K into crypto, be prepared to lose it all. Then you won't be disappointed if it happens. If you think, oh, it's a bit of a gamble, I can't afford to lose this, well, then I would say to you, please tread cautiously, because this is something that is very misunderstood. Most people have no idea what it is. They don't know anything about encrypted wallets. They're holding large amounts of money with trading platforms that could liquidate at any time. Their money could disappear literally into thin air. So please, just a word of caution based on that article that you're writing and what you've said. For any listeners out there, do as you must. If you believe in
it's happened.
Go for it.
It's happened. It already has happened that many people lost money, and they were and some people committed suicide over it already. Yeah. You know, from the amounts of money, whatever it is that they've lost. You know, we don't even know what it is anymore. So
yeah, because it's all out there. It's in the ether. You know, even Ethereum. I mean, like at one point there were two large crypto investments, Dogecoin and Shiba Inu Millions. They were based on the names of Elon Musk's dogs, and people were investing millions, if not billions, off the back of that. And both of those have tanked spectacularly since the start of this year. So you'll hear great news stories about people that got in early and made a fortune. That's fine. But listen, there's also a lot of woe and weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth from people that piled in off the back of that and then saw the thing tank and then panicked and liquidated their position with a huge loss. So take advice, do your own research, and beware, and don't invest any more than you can afford to lose. So that's a little bit of crypto advice, observations from myself and Karen. We're going to take a little very quick ad or news break here, and when we come back, let's look at some more of your writing output here on TNT Radio.
Darren Metzer here with a look at your TNT Radio news headlines. After days of lying in state, the body of the late Queen Elizabeth II will begin its final journey on Monday morning as part of a grand state funeral. Also, a magnitude 6.8 earthquake has hit southeast Taiwan, wreaking devastation and sparking tsunami warnings. And in his first interview in his presidency with an American TV journalist, President Joe Biden discussed a number of topics with 60 Minutes.
Globalist agendas, democratic rights at risk, corruption, propaganda. It never stops. Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
Okay, Karen, something else you had been writing about, and I meant to ask you about it or talk to you about it the last time you were on, but we got a little bit diverted, was there's this, let's just say this place in Saudi Arabia called Neom, okay, N-E-O-M. Now, maybe someone out there is listening and going, what's that? I've never heard of that before. Yeah, it's there. It even has its own Twitter page. If you just search Twitter at N-E-O-M, new wonders for the world. This is like a desert utopia that they're trying to construct and build in Saudi Arabia. They have plans to make a city in a straight line. It's called The Line. And yeah, they've got a computer mock-up of it, what it might look like, who will be in it, what you can do in it. It looks horrible, It looks like a dystopian hell, but I think they're gonna certainly do their best to build it. And you know what? I don't think they're gonna have any problem finding people that want to live in it, because that's what people are like right now. Tell us a little bit about NEOM, and tell us a little about this The Line. The Line.
It's pretty crazy, isn't it? It's being built by Saudi Arabia's Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. They call him MBS for short. And, you'd always, who wouldn't want to live in a city built by a guy that, you know, has absolutely no compunction with killing off people within his own community, or, you know, masking women and, you know, I mean, every kind of thing that you could ever imagine that does not go with a free society. I can't say much for my own country, the United States, anymore either. So, you know, so this is his big dream that he's building in the desert. And it is, if you think of, have you ever seen those ant farms, you know, where you know, you buy them for your kids and you fill them with ants, ants and with sand, and then you can look in either side at them as they're building little things. Well, that's essentially how I think of The Line, which is kind of like one of those ant farms. And whoever is observing can watch the people who are inside of this city. And it's built, and it's in a long straight line. So you're living, you know, everybody's living one on top of the other inside of this enclosed space that they can sort of, you know, look out at the world beyond. I mean, it's the most bizarre thing you could ever imagine. And of course, everyone is being monitored 24/7 in every type of way that you could imagine. So, you know, there's never going to be any crime. There's never going to be anything bad. It's all going to be perfect. It's all going to be this utopia that, of course, is going to be absolutely horrific. But don't worry, because everybody's going to be completely drugged up. So everybody will be fine, you know, in there. So in the piece that I wrote, I compared it with when living in Luxor, Egypt, you know, which was the original sort of city of the dead. And I compared these two different cities of the dead, and that I'd rather live in a real world where I can see my opponent, you know, even though living in Luxor was a very dangerous time in my life in some ways, at least I could see the whites of my opponent's eyes, you know. But if you're living in The Line, they're looking at you and you cannot see them ever, you know. So who would want to live there? I don't know. I'd rather face my opponent, you know, with and know what I'm in for, you know, rather than being in a petri dish.
And from the outside, I understand that the paneling on the side of this thing is going to be reflective glass. So actually, someone walking past, you know, someone who happens to be strolling free through the deserts of Saudi Arabia won't even see it. They'll just see the reflection. It's almost like they want to remove you from existence and put you in this line or this petri dish, as you've said, like a little bacteria, and watch you blossom and spawn. What a hell. But, you know, sadly, like this 81 million alleged Biden voters and the 48% that allegedly want Biden to be president again, I have to keep reminding myself of something, that the globalists have advanced their position to this point without really using violence or not coercion. They've used a lot of coercion and bullying and psychological warfare, but they haven't actually put anyone's arm up their back and forced them to get vaccinated or forced them to mask or forced them to do this. There are, I believe, people out there that will actually be listening to us right now and going, that sounds absolutely great. I would love that. No crime, and we get our temperature regulated, and we're in little zones, and we're safe, and we don't have to worry about this, and this. Karen, I sadly believe that there would actually be people queuing up, like a real estate agent, you know, when he releases a new development in a nice area, they queue out overnight to get the deposit for a flat or an apartment or a new build. I think if the Saudi Arabians built this today and put it on the market, I think there will be people queuing up to put deposits down to go and live in The Line. That's sad, but that's what I think. I think people will actually buy into this concept.
100%, they will. I mean, people already were moving towards that already anyways. I mean, what they have done is to make the real world appear and be so frightening to live in that everybody wants to be safe, you know, and that the government or these, you know, experts, the scientists and what have you, will keep you safe. They'll take care of you. You know, and people, and yes, there are a lot of people who will want to do that. And I think a lot of this, you know, when they shut everything down and everybody had to stay in their homes, you know, you see also think about us, like, I mean, I'm older, I'll be gone. They don't care about me. They're bringing in the young people, the children, you know, into this, also this virtual world where they're removing them more and more from reality. I know many young people who are, you know, don't think the real world is all that great. Like, you know, oh, bugs. Ooh, you know, all these things, you know, you can get diseases out there. Somebody might breathe on me. Even when the masks were taken away, you could still see teenagers wearing their masks on the street because it was cool. That they thought it was a cool thing to do, you know, to wear those masks. And especially for girls, covering their faces, you know, many girls kept on covering their faces. I know so many girls, all they do is they go home after school and they're on their devices and they only have filters. They never show their real face anymore. So they're removing them more and more from this real world. And so to be in a place like that, that is completely protected and confined, they're really preparing younger people to really want to live like this. So this is insidious.
It fits in with the whole Agenda 2030 business of you'll own nothing, you'll be happy. That's actually a concept that they're pushing on. Maybe not for you and I or people of our generation. I certainly would never subscribe to that. But I can see when I look around at the moment, you know, and how addicted the younger generation are to devices. If it's not a mobile that they're standing, I mean, like in the morning, I can see lots of kids going to school all over the place, standing in groups. They're all walking, looking at mobiles, standing, looking at mobiles, sitting around a table, looking at mobiles. They go into school, they're checking the mobiles, they're on computers. They go home, it's a laptop, it's a mobile, and on and on and on it goes. And it's not just the kids. You know, if you go out into any, you know, coffee shop or restaurant around here, the adults are doing it right up until, you know, old age pensioners. They're sitting in little tables with their phones, looking at their photographs, showing their friends their photographs. It seems to be the art of conversation and the art of actual human interaction is a dying art. It's not something people either want to do or actually can do, is hold a conversation with another live human being. It seems to be a dying art.
Absolutely it is. And this is very, very... I don't know. It drives me crazy. It's so insidious and so terrible. I remember I climbed a mountain. I did a hike and I get to the top and I'm at the top and I'm feeling so great. Wow. It's so beautiful. Look at the view. And there's there's other people up there, but they're all on their phone recording the being there, rather than living being there, you know? So there is this complete disconnect now. There is a disconnect from reality. Maybe it's the beginning, you know, of a new reality. You know, we don't imagine what reality will be, you know, a couple hundred years from now, you know, if it continues on this path. What will reality be, you know? I mean, if we're still even here, if we haven't completely destroyed the human race, that's another possibility.
It is a possibility. And listen, you know, people don't like that kind of talk. Oh, we're gonna come out of this. We're going to win. Maybe we will. Maybe we will. Or maybe we won't. Or maybe we'll all end up in that big line. And maybe that line will extend past Saudi Arabia and sneak its way all over to California. Mm-hmm. And you'll be sitting in your little cubicle. And I'll be in my little cubicle in Ireland. And we'll all be living in the line. Listen, It's possible. And you talked about on the mountaintop with the mobile phones. There was a great picture I saw over the weekend of Queen, the band Queen, playing at Live Aid back in 1985. I think it was July 1985. But they stole the show. Freddie Mercury on stage, one of the greatest frontmen ever. And there was a photograph taken from the side of the stage looking out onto the crowd. And there was about, I don't know, 100,000 odd people there. They were all lifting their hands in the air. They were all shouting, not a mobile phone in sight, right? If that was to happen today, right, everybody would be watching the concert through their mobile phone camera and recording it, even though they're there in the moment. It's like that device wants to rob you of all connection to reality, to the point that even when you're in a real situation, you're watching it through a mobile phone lens, okay, and recording it to do what? To post it onto the internet along with the other 100,000 people posting exactly the same clip onto the internet. One person should be given a camera, one, and say, right, on behalf of the whole crowd, you record it, and if you want to say you were there, download it from this site afterwards and tell all your friends that you recorded it. Enjoy the damn concert. But no, they must record. Record.
It's okay to take a picture. I mean, take a photograph of something, of course. You know, and like in the old days, you would take a picture. And then what did you do with that photograph? You know, you put it in a photo album. Maybe you take the photo album out. You look at it, you know, with your friend. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. But now everything is this fake reality. Fake. I mean, what do you call it? It's this complete removal.
Yeah.
And I mean, I wrote a piece. My last piece is called Hustling Humans, and we can get maybe, you know, talk more about that after the have ads coming up. Yeah. But what's happening to kids with these devices? How they're going inside of these devices is quite horrific too. Mm-hmm. And what they're being fed.
That's it. They're being fed this cyber diet, and it's not particularly good. And dare I say, actually, the more time I think people spend online, the less they look after their bodies, their minds, and their diet. I think that they're more prone to just eat crap and junk food and not exercise because it becomes all enveloping and all engrossing. And by the way, the concert thing, I remember, I don't know about you, but I remember when I used to go to concerts back in the 80s and 90s, there was always a thing on the ticket. Yeah, a good old-fashioned ticket. You had to get a ticket. I had to go and buy a ticket in person. And on the ticket, it said no recording devices, no camera, no photography, no nothing. They would search you on the way in to make sure you weren't recording a bootleg or taking photos that you could then, you know, I don't know, would sell them a magazine. So when you went to a concert, you went and you enjoyed the experience and you had great memories. Then you bought a magazine that maybe reviewed the concert and then you relived it through that. Not this constant filming of everything. And by the way, you're selfish because you're ruining the view of the person behind you, but then the person behind you has their camera as well, and then they're ruining for the person behind them, and on and on and on and on it goes. Put the cameras down.
We used to just, hold up your lighter, you know, and how beautiful that was.
Health and safety, but you can't light. You can't hold a lighter up. You have to put your phone torch on instead and blind everyone with LEDs. But give me the 80s, please, Lord. Give me the 80s back again, even for a week. Give me the 80s. But anyway, we've got to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll look at that business that you were talking about just before the break and dig into a little bit more detail here on TNT Radio.
De-weaponizing weather with reality and perspective.
Close to 3 months ago, I wrote an article for CFACT on the man-made climate disaster that was coming for Europe because of these insane policies. And it's really starting to have people take notice. Even Glenn Beck is having a special on it Wednesday night in the United States. But here's what I want to ask the leaders of the Western world that are doing this to people with this phony climate war. Are you advancing the cause of mankind doing this, or are you leading to more misery? Take care of the problems today, not worry about what may or may not happen 100 years down the road. And I'll tell you what, I took a look at the Japanese model for the winter. There's a lot of blocking over Greenland and Iceland, and it looks bad for Europe. but we've been saying that we're concerned about that since spring. This is WeatherBell.com meteorologist Joe Bastardi for TNT Radio, asking you to enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you got.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
At the World Economic Forum's 2018 annual meeting in Davos, globalist stakeholders plotted to advance a program for user-centric digital identities. This global problem is well underway, but the mainstream media fails to report it. Klaus Schwab's World Economic Forum claims digital identities are urgently needed, otherwise citizens and consumers may miss out on the opportunities of the fourth industrial revolution. In reality, the globalist program of digital identities would create an Orwellian dystopia, where oppressive governments backed by multinational corporations could track and monitor every transaction that we make. The World Bank's October 2019 Identification for Development Practitioners Guide states, "Digital ID and payments platforms provide the means to move towards a cashless society. Will the bank accounts of those opposing this tyranny be frozen?"
The news everyone is talking about. TNT Radio, where the longer you listen, the more reasons you find to keep listening. Lighting the fuse for freedom. TNT Radio.
Okay, I'm just wrapping it up here with Karen Hunt, talking about some of your writing output. We touched on Neom's The Line. We're going to look at Hustling Humans now. That's another piece that you've done, which is a bit of a, you know, I didn't realize the depth to which this administration sank under Obamacare. But talking about, let's just say, how can you say, profiting off of the back of human misery to the point whereby there are people who are renting out what sober houses to put people into and coining money off of the back of that. Tell us a little bit about this piece. Give us a little bit of an overview on this piece, Hustling Humans, how Obamacare turned the rehab industry into the biggest insurance scam of them all. That's quite a claim. What are you talking about? Is this libel, or is this a fantasy piece, or is this actually happening in America?
Well, just the one piece of it, if you're talking about the rehab recovery industry, and what I believe, I write a lot about the drug industry and drugs, because I believe that that's really the biggest downfall of all, and what has destroyed is destroying people's minds, destroying their bodies. It's all around us. And there is not a lot of distinction anymore between the legitimate drug industry and the street drug industry. But in Obamacare, every insurance company, everybody was forced to get insurance. You had to, no matter how poor you were, you had to get insurance. And a lot of money was thrown at these insurance companies. And every insurance company had to have a component for rehab. And so a lot of money was thrown at rehab. But like anything else, to actually recover, you're losing your client. And yeah. So within this industry, it became like everything else, it became a revolving door. You know, you create a problem, create a solution, and then let them go back to the problem so that they will come back again. And the amount of, like, for example, just for one drug test, it can cost, you can be billed $10,000 for one test, one urine sample from your child. And so people would send their children into these recovery places, and it was just became this frightening revolving door, basically. And so that's basically what the piece is about. But the other component of it is that drug, you know, it used to be the drug dealer is on the street. Well, it's still like that. Every street corner, there's a drug dealer offering your kids something. And parents don't even realize a lot of times what their children are facing every time they walk out that door. But inside their home, they also see their parents taking every kind of pill, you know? Mm-hmm. So it is all around them. And now on their devices, that drug dealer, what parents don't realize, is in their home, because any young person can go into their phone or their device and order the drugs that they want straight from the comfort of their own bedroom. And so, and so now it is not better. It is not safer. Parents need to understand their children are not safer sitting in their bedroom on their devices than they are in, at least when they're out in the street, they learn to deal with things. They can make choices. They're using their mind, their body, they're facing consequences. They're interacting. But when they're sitting passively in their room on that device, there is nothing but that they are being fed constantly what they should do, and they are then just responding to whatever stimulus that is coming at
them. It's so powerful. It is so powerful. And when I think, you know, I'm thinking about the pharmaceutical industry, and anyone that's listening, and this includes probably you, and it certainly includes me, but usually every home has a drug cupboard or a cupboard where you keep your pills and your medications and your prescriptions. You open it up. Some people's cupboards are completely chocka. You could open that thing up and things could fall out, pills, boxes could fall out and hit you in the head, stuff that's been in there maybe for years and has expired, you've still got it, things you breathe, things you squirt into your nose, things you swallow, little white pills, and no one really knows what's in those little white pills. We take it in blind faith that the doctor's prescribing them to us for our health, that if we ingest them and they're assimilated into our body, they will help us. We know nothing about the ingredients, even though they're listed on the packet, you know, glucosamine sulfate and A, B, C, D and blah, blah, blah. No one has a clue. It's like, is this safe? Yeah, okay, I'm going to take it. And I mean, I had an experience about 4 years ago. I was in Uganda and I became very ill indeed. Okay, I had a viral and a bacterial infection and I was sick as a pig. Okay, so the family I was staying with in the bush said, we need to get you to a clinic. They need to evaluate you. So I said, okay. So I was so ill, I thought I was going to die anyway. I felt horrible. I said, get me somewhere. So they took me to this clinic, this private clinic. You walk in and they say, okay, take a seat. You'll be called in. You call in and you get triaged. Some woman said, what's wrong? I'm sick. Okay, go and sit outside. And then some other person called you and said, we're going to take a blood test. And I'm like, so anyway, luckily there were, you know, hypodermic needles and there were freshly opened and they weren't reused, let's just say. They said, now we're going to run that through an analytical machine. Go and sit outside. So we'll go and sit outside. 5 minutes later, they call me back in. Now the doctor will see you. And he said, okay, you've got a bacterial infection and you've got a viral infection and we're going to get you some pills. And this is a field clinic in Uganda. So yeah, the pills, what was in the pills? So anyway, he gives me a piece of paper and he says, take this to the woman at the front, the pharmacist, and she will give you your prescription, right? So there I am holding this grotty piece of paper with stuff scrawled on it in Lugandan. I don't even know what it says. I hand it to this old lady, this old mama, okay, this old mama who was behind this screen with all these boxes and pills in blank containers. There was no names on any of them. And she gets little plastic wallet things and little paper bags and she puts two in this and big fat one in that and a wee white one in that and she writes on it in pencil two daily and one in the morning and this and she hands it to me and she goes, there you go.
And you
Karen, believe me, my faith was tested. I felt so ill. I thought I was going to die anyway. I went, it ain't going to make any difference. If I don't take these pills, I'm going to die. If I do take them, well, I might die, but then again, I might recover. And you know what? Believe it or not, within a day, I started to pick up. I have no idea what I took. But but it was blind.
Sometimes it's good. Sometimes it's good to take a pill. Sometimes, I'm not saying you should have never take a pill.
Yeah.
But I can tell
they could have been giving me rat poison.
Exactly. They could. You don't. Yeah, it's very scary. I take as few pills as possible. Let me tell you, like never, in fact. But when we were traveling through the Soviet Union, when I was like a teenager, my dad got an infection in his foot and he had, it was, I think it was in, where was it, in Kiev or something? I don't, what was still part of the Soviet Union. Mm-hmm. And he went to this hospital. Like, he thought, oh, my toe, I have this infection. And he came running out of the hospital. They wanted to apply leeches to his foot. Seriously. He was like, no, I'll take care of it myself. But, you know, the leeches could probably would have, you know, drawn out the... But he was just freaked out at the idea of leeches. Imagine going into a hospital in the Soviet Union, and they're going to put leeches on your foot.
A big bucket of leeches saying, here, just stick your foot in there, and those guys will have you fixed in no time at all. Exactly. There's people talk about faith and say, oh, I don't have faith. A lot of people, they exhibit faith whether they believe it or not. You know, so if you sit on a chair, you know, you didn't check the legs were secure. When you get into your car, you don't check the brakes and advance, you don't check the steering fluid, you don't check the coolant is taut. You just believe that it's going to be safe to drive and you get on with it. It's the same with the medical profession. A lot of people, although I think they're coming to their senses, a lot of people for a long time have blindly accepted what they were told. And I think the last 2 years really has caused a lot of question marks to appear over medical advice, and certainly pharmaceutical advice, and certainly vaccine or injection advice. And I think we could be seeing a big shift. There's a lot of faith has been lost in that profession over the last few years, and rightly so, because they've been pushing something that's patently dangerous and patently harming people. And that's something else
for greed.
For greed, and
you know, the first, you know, and I talk about in another one, So You Want to Be a Kingpin, I talk about the whole fentanyl crisis. And you know, that started in the 1800s from one of the first millionaire merchants, John Jacob Astor. It wasn't, we blame Russia, but this American guy actually started the drug trade, the opium trade, by bringing it to China in the beginning. So if you go back to the beginning, you can find out so many interesting things.
I would love you to expand on that, but we're out of time. We're out of time. But you can find that details on that if you check out Karen's Substack, khmezek.substack.com. You'll find all of her written output there. Karen, thank you very, 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 very much indeed.
Thank you. Again.
You get back to bed, get some sleep, and I'm going to continue marching on down this road on TNT Radio. We'll be right back after the news.